is Access Radio Chicago, AM 750 WNDZ, Portage, Indiana, Chicago.
The views, opinions, and beliefs expressed on this radio program by the hosts, co-hosts, guests, and or callers do not necessarily reflect those of this radio station and its ownership. The following program, Golfers on Golf, is paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.
Welcome to Golfers on Golf Radio, hosted by Ed Stevenson, Phil Berger, Rory Spears, and Len Zien, Chicago's favorite foursome.
Well, good morning and happy Saturday. It's 10 a.m. and we're calling you to the tee. It's time for an hour of bringing you the world of golf from a Chicago area perspective. The show is Golfers on Golf. And hey, we're thrilled you can join us this morning. It's a beautiful, beautiful June day here. Golf season truly in full swing. And in studio this morning, I'm PGA professional Ed Stevenson alongside longtime Chicago area sports journalist Rory Spears. On the line, we have the Illinois Golf Hall of Famer Len Zien, and not in studio, Bill Berger. We're going to send him some get-well wishes. He's been a tad under the weather, but spoke to Billy this morning. He's doing great. We'll look forward to having him back with us next week. But, gee, Rory, you know, gosh, what are we going to have to talk about? There's just nothing going on in the world of golf. How are we going to fill this hour of airtime?
Well, there's really, I don't think there's any tournaments coming up right now.
Oh, wait, the U.S. Open's coming up.
Oh, really? Yeah. Do we have to make predictions today?
I predict we might.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think we just got to send it right down to Florida and get Len Zien on the line because Len, the world traveler golf writer, has been to the Philadelphia area, the Poconos. And Lenny, tell us about the trip. You got some good golf destinations for our listeners to check out?
Well, I tell you, this has been quite a couple months here. We've had stays of at least a week in Mississippi, Alabama, and Pennsylvania. And tomorrow we got a short one in Daytona Beach. They got some things to announce over there, which isn't a very long drive for us. But we were really interested in the mountain golf offered in Pennsylvania. We played three courses, the third of which is the most interesting. It's called the Shawnee, and it has a lot of history. Sam Snead was once the pro there. It's the first course ever designed by the legendary architect A.W. Tillinghast, and he dates back to 1910. So, I mean, it was a fun play. Mountain golf is certainly different. We don't have any of that in Florida or in Illinois, so have very little experience with it. But it was a lot of fun. A lot of different kind of golf. Cool, much cooler weather than what we see here. Now that we're back in Florida, and it's right around 90 every day and a lot of rain, but it's been an interesting segment. I don't remember quite having this variety of golf in our travels over the. We've been doing this for 14 years, and I don't remember ever having a stretch of such different golf played in such a short period of time.
Well, Len, I think part of what makes this game so fun, and even living here in the United States so fun, is the, you know, the game's the same in many ways no matter where you go. It's the cup size is the same. You've got a club, you've got a golf ball with its own specs and dimensions, and yet the courses and the topography and just the whole atmosphere can change so much from desert golf to what you're getting in Florida, what we typically see here in the Midwest to mountain golf. And I think that variety, sure, we know in other sports, maybe the size of the soccer pitch is a little different or the ambiance of a hockey rink's a little different, but there's not so much variance in really what the playing conditions are. And yet you just in the last few weeks had a pretty good panorama of all the different types of things you can experience just in this country for golf.
Yeah, you know, we had the previous two trips. Mississippi was a lot of new courses and very nice. They're doing a lot of new things in Mississippi. It's kind of exciting over there. Then we went to the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail, which is a place I've wanted to go to for quite a while. And boy, the golf was tough there. I think it was tough because it was such a all of a sudden we were in a completely different world over there from all the golf that we've played anywhere else. I mean, it was all very challenging courses with lots of elevation changes. I think that was the main thing. It was really a wake up call. All of it was fun. I mean, don't get me wrong, we enjoyed all of it, but. The Robert Trent Jones was really tough, and then we got into Pennsylvania. We had the International Network of Golf Spring Forum going on in Valley Forge, and we stayed around there to see what the Poconos would be like, which was a couple hours away. So we got a lot of taste of different golf. We're getting a little tired of traveling, but it's been fun. So we're not going to stop for a while. We got to take advantage of these chances to experience these things while we have the time for it, and so we're going to be going, as I say, to Florida, places we've been to before, but the other coast, and see what it's like over there these days.
Well, it's been a whirlwind for you, Len, and I know Rory and I are here maybe a little envious, but now you're probably reacclimating to your own bed for at least just a little bit, and you know, this week we had one of those moments that we'll look back on and say, hey, where were you when news broke? I know Tuesday morning I was tied up in a conference room working on a contract, and instead everyone started talking about texts and tweets and everything coming through. It felt like April Fool's Day to hear that that there had been a new business arrangement between the PGA Tour and the folks with the LIV Golf Tour. But where were you? Where were you when that happened, Len?
Well, you know, we got back from Pennsylvania Monday night, and my writing cycle is I have a column for the Herald every Monday that's due, and I had gotten that in before we left the hotel for the last. We had a 10-hour drive to from wherever we were at in Pennsylvania. I can't remember right now, all the way to get home. To wake up the next morning, and I believe Rory alerted me to the fact that that the big announcement was coming. I hadn't read it about there, but. That triggered everything because I had to, you know, it required three straight days of columns for the Herald, and also watching a lot of TV and watching the Golf Channel and seeing what those folks had to say about it. It was a wake up call. The one thing here about that, and you probably are going to get more into this as the show goes on, but this is billed as a merger, and I felt that was very after. Following it all and over the days and all that, I think that was very much a premature statement to make there. I mean, there's an awful lot of things that have to happen and will happen in the next few months. I mean, it'll take the rest of the year to really be able to call it a merger. What it is at the least it's a truce, I think, between the three tours, and hopefully it'll bring a little peace from that. From that standpoint, there won't be all the bickering and the arguing, but there's a lot of things that still have to be settled before we really have these three tours working together.
And Len, and you thought that all you were going to have to do was sit back and write about University of Illinois alum Michael Fiegel's 59 in the opening round on the Corn Ferry Tour. And I don't know, and we're going to ask our next guest, Gary D'Amato, Wisconsin.golf, if he knows as well. But I don't recall any other 59s on the Corn Ferry Tour. I'm sure it's been done, but does anybody else come to mind on that?
Well, Michael's 59 was the ninth in the history of the tour. There was one earlier this year. In fact, I didn't get to this one tournament. I didn't get to it. It's right in my backyard in Lakewood Ranch. And I got to tell you, I can't remember the player's name, but he shot the tour played here in, it must have been about 2 or 3 months ago. And there was a 59 in Lakewood Ranch, club here. Michael, he was red hot yesterday or on Thursday, and then he went to a 71 on Friday. So it's hard to follow up a great round like that with another great round, and he learned that pretty quick. It's not surprising, but But 59 on that tour, I don't know who the other 59s were, although there was one statistic that I could come up with that in 2006, Jason Gore, and in 2017, the German guy, Jaeger, they shot 59s. And didn't win their tournaments that they played in that year. So it's not necessarily surprising that Michael would back up right away here. But we'll see how he does on the weekend. It's a memory he's going to have forever, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Well, you know what? Our first guest today has a lot on his plate, and not just PGA Tour Live. He's getting on the plane tomorrow to go out to Los Angeles in the U.S. Open, and then he's going to come home and roll up his sleeves and get ready for the U.S. Senior Open. And in between all of that, he's got course openings and renovations and Sand Valley projects and everything else on his plate. And if that's not enough, he's also the brand new president of the Golf Writers Association of America. And we welcome back to Golfers on Golf, Gary D'Amato. Gary, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. I'm in Madison at the AmFam Championships Rookers event here, and second round underway. We had Justin Leonard shoot a 62 yesterday, course and tournament record, and Justin's lowest round in like, I don't know, 18 years, I think. Of course, he hasn't, you know, he didn't play a lot. After 2015 when he went to Golf Channel, but his game looks like it's back.
You know, Gary, I've got to ask you, after watching the playoff between Padraig Harrington and Steve Stricker at the senior PGA, and of course they were both captains at the Ryder Cup a couple years ago at Whistling Straits, you know, people look for these rivalries in golf, and you know, Padraig Harrington's going to have a chance to take down Steve Stricker at the U.S. Senior Open up there at Century World. Is there a little bit of a rivalry between these two captains going up against each other on the course after doing it off the course at the Ryder Cup?
I think there is. I mean, it's a friendly rivalry. They like each other. They're friends. But, you know, they both played extremely well on the campus tour, especially Steve lately. I mean, he shot 65 in the opening round of his tournament yesterday, and that was his 53rd consecutive round of par or better, which breaks the all-time record across all PGA Tour sanctioned tours. Tiger Woods held the record with Steve at 52 until yesterday, and Steve said he's gonna send Tiger a text and kind of jab him that he's got Tiger's record. But, you know, you'd think once in a while you'd have a bad day and, you know, and make a few bogeys and a couple of birdies and shoot one or two over. But, and of those 53 consecutive rounds, only four are even par. So 49 of 53 rounds, he's broken par, which is, he's on a heater.
Streaking Steve Stricker. Wow.
Yeah.
Gary, you know what, between you just mentioned you're at the AmFam Steve Stricker's tournament over there in Wisconsin, and I know that is gearing up maybe a year, 2 years from now for a new home, and Steve's backyard over there, a redo happened at the club he looks out on, and of course the U.S. Senior Open coming your way in a few weeks. There's some new golf starting up at Sand Valley, and take us through a little bit about the busy season ahead that's called Wisconsin Golf.
It's going to be a busy season. You know, yeah, obviously the Senior Open in a couple weeks up at Century World. I talked to Mark Rolfing by phone a couple weeks ago. He was up there doing the scouting report, you know, for getting ready for the TV broadcast. And he thinks the scores are going to be extremely high. He said the rough is unbelievably thick and tall. Of course, they're going to cut it. But he said the rough, narrow fairways and thick rough, he said, is going to present a lot of problems. But that's, you know, then we've got our state amateur, our state open. And it's a fun stretch. It's a very, very busy stretch. Like you mentioned, I'm going to the U.S. Open, and I come home and then dive right into other stuff. So it's nonstop for about 2 months, but it's I'm on a golf course every day. I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, that's always real good. You know, Gary, you mentioned you're headed out to the U.S. Open at L.A. Country Club, and I had the benefit of talking to someone this week that has family that is members at the club, and they passed along this tidbit to me that The USGA a little disappointed. They have not been able to get the rough for this week's U.S. Open, maybe either to the length or to the thickness that they was looking for. So the rough will not be as penal this week out at the U.S. Open. And I'm curious what it's going to do to scores, but it sounds like these guys might be able to get a little more under par than what the USGA had set out when they started to develop the course conditions for the week ahead.
That's very interesting. I had not heard that, and I'm really looking forward to getting out there and seeing LACC. You know, there really hasn't been tons of tournament golf there, especially in recent years. So it's kind of an unknown quantity, and I think we're going to learn a lot, you know, early in the week in practice rounds. But I did not hear about the rough. I guess go back to 2017 at Erin Hills when they were so worried about high scores that they made the fairways probably wider than they needed to, and then you know, the rough wasn't all that deep. And, you know, Brooks Koepka and company shot lights out there.
10:15, you're listening to Golfers on Golf Radio. I'm Rory Spears along with Ed Stevenson in studio. We got Len Zima on the line, our first guest. Gary D'Amato checking in from Wisconsin before he gets ready over in Madison today, before he gets ready to go to L.A. Lenny, did you want to jump in? You got a question for Gary?
Well, I tell you, Gary, I gotta tell you this. We certainly found a lot of different golf courses in the Poconos. And Gary and I were teammates in the Girlands Cup matches at the week before in Valley Forge, and as the highlight of the ING spring form. And our team didn't do so well there. Probably because of me.
You didn't have to divulge that, Len.
You know what, Gary, though?
I'll take my share of the blame for that, too, Len. It was fun playing with you.
Yeah, you're writing so much guys aren't getting out enough, and you probably, those handicaps, you should have had a few more shots, right, Ed?
No doubt about it. It's tough getting all that riding done and still, you know, keeping the appropriate amount of lag on the swing. But, hey, Gary.
Sounds like a good excuse for me.
Well, all of us golfers will take anyone we can get.
Right.
Hey, Gary, can you tell us about the move for Steve Stricker's tournament and the renovation that's been done at the club that he looks out on from his home residence?
Yeah, in 2 years, 2025, the AmFam Championship is going to move up to what is used to be Cherokee Country Club, where Steve actually has a home and where he's played, you know, all his home golf, you know, for years and years. And Steve and a guy from the PGA Tour, his name escapes me, but he's involved in the TPC network. They were charged with renovating the old Cherokee Country Club, which was built on a marsh. So it always has had this problem with, you know, really soft fairways, peaty fairways, and some of the water hazards had become, you know, overgrown. So they went in and they cleaned up all the water areas, the penalty areas, and they raised all the fairways 3 or 4 feet and capped them with sand and did a little change to the routing and, you know, added some spectator mounting and stuff because it is going to be branded as TPC Wisconsin. And Steve's very, very excited. You know, when I talk to him about it, he lights up. It's the most animated that I see him. He'd rather talk about TPC Wisconsin than shooting 65. So he's excited about it.
Well, at TPC Wisconsin, that's exciting. I mean, I think all of us here south of the Illinois-Wisconsin border, we can't wait for the golf trips we plan to head up into Wisconsin. And thinking about Century World, Gary, there was a point in time where it was such a destination. And then the landscape of destinations within Wisconsin has become glorious between the Kohler properties. We mentioned Erin Hills, of course, the Sand Valley properties. Here we have Century World stepping back up to the big stage. They've made a tremendous commitment, even keeping the course closed up until the Senior U.S. Open. I'm really interested in your perspective. In that crowded landscape of great golf destinations in Wisconsin, what is this going to mean for Century World in the years ahead? And will this Senior U.S. Open really help bring them maybe back into the spotlight a little more?
I think there's no question about it. You know, I had a really interesting interview with Pete McPartland, who is the CEO of Century Insurance. And when he became CEO about 12, 13 years ago, one of his first decisions he had to make was what to do with Century World. And there was some thought in the company just closing it because, you know, they didn't want to really necessarily be in the golf business. But he decided, no, this is a community asset. It's a jewel. And not only are we going to keep it open, but we're going to, you know, we're going to raise it up. And that's exactly what they did. You know, two renovations. The first one was a 2-year renovation. And then when they got the senior open, they, you know, they did some more tweaking. But they went to 20-minute tee times. They built concession stands on the course. And now it's you go there, you pay $275, which is a, you know, that's a pretty big nut. But what you get for that is 20-minute tee time, so you're never pushed, you're never rushed, and you never see groups, you know, in front. You never have to wait.
Right, wow.
And also, you put your wallet in your car, and you stop at these concession stands 4 times throughout the course and order, get whatever you want. Hot food, they have a chef at these things. They have bartenders. As much as you want to eat or drink, you can sit in your car for 20 minutes and let a group go through you if you want and have a nice lunch. And I just think it's a real novel approach, and the course is spectacular.
Yeah, excited to see really this is back on the big stage. And I think, you know, people have thought for years, of course, about the Flower Hole, but that property is so much, you know, the Flower Hole is spectacular, but it's so much more than the Flower Hole. And some of the changes there, even Jay Blasey's involvement at different points. I can't wait to see really how the championship plays out, and rooting for good weather and really rooting for Century World.
Hey Gary, yeah, I got to tell you that before I left media day, I saw Ben Kimble from the USGA, who will be in charge of setup that week, and I asked him. I said, "Do you put a few pin placements on the Flower Hole where perhaps a hole in one shot would have the highest percentage of happening?" Because Gary, you know this. You've played that hole. You've seen it in full bloom. I got to believe somebody makes a hole-in-one at that U.S. Senior Open in the middle of those flowers that it's going to be on the highlight reels. It's going to be shown forever. It'll probably be on the Century World website. And it's one of those things that, as they say in social media, goes viral everywhere.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that, Rory. That's a very good point. But, yeah, a hole-in-one on that hole, well, you know, that hole is going to be shown like crazy on TV. It's probably going to be the opening shot. You know, when the broadcast comes on, and I'm sure they're going to show a lot of action on that hole. So, yeah, a hole in one would be really cool there. One other thing I wanted to mention quickly was to get back to the point of, are they going to get more stuff? Without question. They are the insurance provider now for the USGA. And when they had the U.S. Junior Girls there in 2019, there was a storm on Saturday morning, and like hundreds of volunteers showed up unannounced, just community people coming to the course to clean up debris and take branches off the course. And the USGA was completely blown away by that.
Wow.
And, you know, now they bring a senior open there, and, you know, they'll never have a U.S. Open there, obviously. There's not enough hotel rooms and that kind of thing, but they're going to get more events there. I don't think there's any question.
Well, that would be that'd be excellent news to see more golf at that facility. They might need a few more hotels in the area. I know there's probably not as many in Stevens Point as everybody would like if you're going to have big golf tournaments. But again, wouldn't surprise me to see more golf there. And Gary, that inn, I think you've probably stayed there too. And I know Lenny stayed there. It's really amazing.
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah. Little boutique hotel, and they left no stone unturned. I love that you get up in the middle of the night and they have the tow stub lights that come on your bed, so you literally don't trip to the bathroom, you know. And then every room has a Wisconsin old-fashioned ingredients and how to make one in your room. And yeah, they thought of everything in that hotel.
Gary, tell us a little bit about Sand Valley. There's it sounds like the Lido is partially open. There's another Tom Doak project going on. A lot of people already flocked there, and it seems like there's going to be even more and maybe more demand. They probably have to build more places to stay. But what's the project scheduling like there at Sand Valley as they continue to evolve?
You know, I tell people I wish I had been smart enough when I heard the Kaisers were going to start building golf there to buy some land around that area, because the real estate market there has just gone crazy. And that was the most depressed county in Wisconsin, believe it or not. And now things are going great guns there because of what the Kaisers are doing. But they're not going to stop at, well, the new, they've got the Lido, which is their third big course, and they've got the 17-hole sandbox par 3. And then you're right, Tom Doak is building another course, and I highly doubt that's the end of it. Mike Michael Kaiser, Mike Kaiser's son, and the Kaiser brothers really run that place, you know, Michael and his brother Chris. But Michael told me that eventually, right now they own about 15,000 acres up there, and he said eventually we'd like to own 100,000 acres. So that is that's mind-blowing to try to put your head around that. But oh, yeah, go ahead.
Gary, do you remember you and I were the first two media people that went up with Craig Haltom to look at the property on a cold November day and just started to imagining what it was going to turn into, and maybe we should have slipped Craig a couple of bucks that day to get to invest in the project. We knew it was going to go somewhere. Mike Kaiser hadn't even signed the paperwork yet to officially own the land, but I know you and I and Craig, we all knew it had potential, but I didn't know if it had this much potential, especially as the one question the Kaiser family had going into the project is, you know, they were building something without a large body of water next to it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but like they like to say, the sand is their ocean up there, because there was a prehistoric lake in that area, you know, millions of years ago. And so the sand in a lot of places is 200 feet deep there. So, and of course, as you guys know, architects love to work in sand.
Yeah, they sure do. Hey, Gary, I got to ask you one more thing before we let you go here today. Since you last joined us last season on the show, you know, somebody who was played a big part in golf in Wisconsin for many years, Herb Kohler, passed away. And, you know, obviously a big loss to the company, the people that knew him and the sport of golf. But what do you think, if you can look in the crystal ball, where's golf going to go now within Kohler Golf with the passing of Herb?
Yeah, that's a very good question. You know, I had a really good relationship with Herb, and it was very sad when he passed. I'm glad he got to see the Ryder Cup before he did die. But at the Golf Writers Dinner in at the Masters this year, I sat next to David Kohler and his wife, Nina. And David and I were talking about golf. And I think, you know, he's a member now at Augusta National, David Kohler is. And I think he views golf as a very, very important part of what they do, their hospitality division up there at Kohler. So, you know, I don't think it's the end of golf building. I don't know if they'll build any more. Well, they've got a fifth course that they're trying to get built, and they're trying to get through some red tape on that up there. But I just think they're going to continue to try to get championships. The PGA will be harder, of course, because of the time of year now. But I think you'll see more championship golf up there. I really do.
All right. Lenny, any final thought, question for Gary?
Well, I tell you, I'm wondering, you know, you're going to be at the U.S. Open. I'm not, but you must have some inside information of who's going to win this, Gare. I mean, I have my picks. But
well, I think you could take maybe John Rahm and Brooks Koepka and give the field to everyone else, because, I mean, Koepka's been amazing at U.S. Opens, and I'm sure he's going to be really tough, but I think I don't think anyone's even going to talk about the championship until it starts, because it's all going to be live talk before that, and live merger talk, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's too bad. It detracts from the U.S. Open a little bit.
Yeah, it does.
It is a hot topic, right?
All right. Well, hey, Gary D'Amato, Wisconsin.golf. Catch Gary's columns and stories there, especially all week long, coming from the U.S. Open. Gary, safe travels out to L.A. and back. We'll see you on a golf course, or more likely at a tournament somewhere this summer ahead. And thanks for jumping in, and we'll be reading your stuff all week long.
All right. Happy to do it. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Safe travels. Thanks.
Okay. That's Gary D'Amato from Wisconsin.golf. With that, we are going to take a quick break, and we will be back with our next guest, Jim Nugent, the publisher of the Global Golf Post, right after this. Erin Hills, one of Wisconsin's top public golf destinations and a top 100 rated golf course, is ready to welcome golfers to a championship golf experience. Erin Hills is where you can enjoy walking on the rolling hills of the Kettle Moraine area just northwest of Milwaukee. Erin Hills has already hosted four USGA championships, including the U.S. Amateur and the 2017 U.S. Open. Now, a fifth USGA championship is coming in 2025, and this time it's the ladies' turn when the Women's U.S. Open arrives. It's also one of six U.S. Open courses open for public play. Now at Erin Hills, it's the 63,000-square-foot putting green, the Drumlin, open for unlimited use for those with a scheduled tee time. While at Erin Hills, you can stay in rooms over the Irish pub or in one of the several cottages right on property. During the warm days of summer, enjoy beverages like a Fescue Rescue or a cold Erin Hills Pilsner. So book your tee times now, because tee times and rooms are going quickly. So book your play and stay by calling Erin Hills at 866-772-4769 or visit erinhills.com. Mistwood Golf Club, located on Renwick Road in Romeoville, is one of the Chicago area's finest public golf facilities, where golfers find a commitment to excellence by the owners, the McWethy family. Mistwood Golf Club, designed and renovated by architect Ray Hearn, is a links-style golf course with 20 sodwall bunkers like those found in Scotland or Ireland. Mistwood has played host to several championships, including the state amateur, and it's the yearly home of the Illinois Women's Open. The driving range and performance center comes with natural grass hitting areas and indoor hitting bays, perfect for lessons, practice, or club fittings. Before or after your round, stop in and enjoy the bar and grill in the performance center or dining in McWethy's Tavern in the main clubhouse. So make your tee times today by calling 815-254-3333 or visit online mistwoodgc.com. All right, it is 10:31. Golfers on Golf Radio. Rory Spears, Ed Stevenson in studio. The Hall of Famer Len Zeem is joining us from the studios down in the Palm Air Studios in beautiful Sarasota, Florida. A couple of quick announcements before we get with Jim Nugent of the Global Golf Post. Congratulations to Jim Miller. He is the new head professional at Kemper Lakes, that being announced this week. And also, you know, Ed, a lot of people, when it comes to clubs, equipment, very technology, hey, you need a new putter, get in the Sam Putt Lab check it out. Well, if you want to just go out and test some putters today and you're not really want to worry about the technology side of things, it's already underway from 10 to 2 today and tomorrow at Heritage Oaks Golf Club in Northbrook. It is Scotty Cameron, Titleist, Test the Putters Day out on the putting green. So you want to see how those new putters actually putt on the greens themselves instead of what the computer's telling you, head on out there today. There's no charge. There's no appointment necessary. Just come on out and test the clubs and get a feel for what you might want to use on the green.
Well, that's great, Roy. Yeah, in the era of data for everything, and I'm a firm believer if you can measure it, you can manage it. So, of course, all the analysis is great, but still getting the putter in your hands and trying a few different things, seeing how it fits your eye, really no substitute there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, one place that you can learn about a lot of equipment and even more about what's happening between the PGA Tour and LIV Golf is the best online golf publication you'll find anywhere, and that's the Global Golf Post. And we're proud to welcome back to the show just a few weeks later the publisher and owner of the Global Golf Post, Jim Nugent. Jim, how are you this morning?
I'm well, guys. Thank you for the kind words, and thanks for having me on this morning.
Hey, Jim, I got to ask you that when you were with us about 3 weeks ago, you suggested the PGA Tour LIV Golf match was standing with the Tour 6 up with 8 to play. So where is it now as they've gone a few more holes?
I think they're in a playoff that'll last the rest of our lives.
Playoff?
Playoff? Oh, boy. Well, you know what, Jim, you know, we talked about this a little earlier before you were with us, but it's one of those announcements where you stop and you almost can remember where you were. And I know I was outside in the middle of seeing operations go for our leagues at Heritage Oaks when Tim Cronin, the Illinois golfer who had seen it on Twitter, was kind enough to give me a phone call. But what was it like in your office as you found out and tried to check in with your staff full of writers around the world and what this really meant?
It was surreal. I have to tell you, we were wrapping up our weekly staff call. I think it was just about 9 o'clock Central Time or close to it. And I got an email from a friend of mine who's typically doesn't send witty and funny emails. and it said Live and PGA Tour merge, and I just didn't know what to think, so I immediately went to CNBC and found out that it was in fact true. And like everyone else, it was just a bombshell of the highest order. Nobody saw this coming. The leading figures in the golf industry got about 30 minutes notice. Jay Monahan's staff got about 30 minutes notice. Until the announcement was made, there were all of 10 people, including both sides, that knew what was going on. And it was just a shocking, shocking development. One of the craziest weeks I've ever had in the golf business.
You know, Jim, I got to ask you, the name Jimmy Dunn has really surfaced through this as maybe the guy who sort of got the ball rolling. And for people who don't know who he is, fill us in a little bit about Jimmy Dunn and perhaps what made him think that he could bring both sides together and get some kind of an agreement.
Well, in Global Golf Post this coming Monday, you're going to get the full backstory on this, but I'm happy to share a lot of it with you right now. It wasn't just Jimmy Dunn. It actually involved two people, a gentleman by the name of Ed Herlihy and then Dunn. Herlihy is the chairman of the PGA Tour Policy Board. He's a member at Augusta National, among many others. He is widely thought to be one of the smartest and toughest lawyers in America, working at a white shoe firm in New York. And late last year, he invited Jimmy Dunn to join the PGA Tour Policy Board. Like Turley, Dunn's a member at Augusta. He's the president at the moment of Seminole Golf Club. He's a skilled player, a very, very successful businessman, and just a bulldog when he gets something in his mind. And the three of them, Herlihy, Dunn, and Monahan, decided after the Masters that maybe it was time to sit down with the public investment fund, who owned majority owner of LIV, and find out what it was they were trying to accomplish. And so Dunn and Herlihy went to London, sat down with him, found him to be a reasonable guy. They had a couple of other meetings. Monahan was brought in. And, you know, both sides had something to gain. The LIV people were scared to death of the court proceedings in Northern California. That was a really, really dangerous situation for them, because if they lost, it was going to become precedent setting for all of their other business interests in America. And those interests are numerous. The tour was spending somewhere in the vicinity of $50 million a year in legal fees, and that was just not sustainable. And so when they kind of compared notes, they said, you know what? What are we fighting over here? The litigation was dropped, and so the public investment fund didn't have to worry about that. The tour is not paying legal fees like they once were. But there's a long, long way to go to bring this, what they're calling a framework, to a written agreement sometime by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jim, I know that our listeners will look forward to checking out Global Golf Post and reading more about this, I think you said, on Monday when this comes out. You know, I've had so many people reach out and say, hey, what's this going to look like? How will this play out? And I've had to say, gosh, I didn't see it coming, and I can't get my head around it yet. I think there's a ways to go, as you just mentioned, to see what this looks like. But if you peered into your crystal ball, Jim, what sort of timeline do you think we're really looking at until it is a little more clear what this new enterprise or venture is truly going to look like and what participation in it means?
Well, I can tell you that Jay Monahan is secure. Even though the players, many of them are irritated with him, he's not going anywhere. He's going to continue to be the commissioner of the PGA Tour, and he is going to have oversight for the LIV Tour for the rest of this year. Mm-hmm. Keith Pelley is going to continue to be the CEO of the DP World Tour. The idea that this Yasser Al-Rumayyan, the leader of the public investment fund, is a new czar of golf, that's just not true. There's a lot of misinformation out there about this. I think it's hard to predict when this is going to kick in, though, because there could be some regulatory issues. You could see the Department of Justice weigh in here. There's been lots of talk about antitrust or monopolistic behavior. The wild card is the players, though. Right now, Jay doesn't have the players with him on this. And if they're
clearly, yeah,
if they rise up in unison and oppose this, it could become problematic. There's a lot of reasons for that. They don't necessarily want the guys that left to be able to come back. Some are upset about doing business at all with Saudi Arabia. Some are upset about the 9/11 situation. But Jay's got a selling job ahead of him. I think he's up to it. I think the players can be mollified, but it isn't going to be quite as easy as they thought.
Len, you want to jump in here with a question for Jim?
Well, I got a couple, really. Jim, what do you think will happen with Greg Norman? And also, what do you think would be a good name for this tour whenever it is all the little pieces are put together?
Well, I think Greg Norman will be gone. They'll write him a check, and I don't think we'll ever hear from him again. The names aren't going to change. It's still going to be the PGA Tour. It's still going to be the DP World Tour. I don't have any reason to think that LIV is going to survive at all. I think they'll finish out their schedule this year, and it will get buried.
I thought for sure you were going to say the Global Golf Tour, you know, promote
that. Yeah. Jim wants to be a title sponsor, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that'll be inexpensive, won't it?
Well, Jim, you know what? It seemed like all the evidence on the day of the announcement was exactly what you just said. Greg Norman, you know, he wasn't filled in. He's gone. He's out of here. And then the next day, reports surfaced that Greg Norman is holding a conference call and that saying with the employees, he's not going anywhere. The employees aren't going anywhere. And nobody's going to lose their job and all of these other things. How much stock do you put in that? And I know that you just said that Greg Norman will be out of here, and it wouldn't surprise me if he got a golden parachute to leave. But there's still people who live say we're not going anywhere.
I guess you would expect them to say that because nothing has been said about LIV in this announcement, and so there's a vacuum, and Norman can say what he wants, and nobody's really going to correct him. A decision on LIV isn't going to be made until much later in the year. So it's very easy for him to say that, you know, as of today, we're moving forward. But I don't see any way that LIV, as we have known, it continues. I think there's interest in trying to study the team format and see if there isn't something that can be done with that, maybe in the off season or something like that. But the 54-hole no-cut stroke play tournaments that we know, those are gone.
Well, Jim, I know the team concept. From my understanding, it seems a lot like these gambling organizations say it's a very popular wager out there, and maybe that's part of the reason the PGA Tour is going to look at that. But some of the more obvious questions that people have talked about, you know, getting these the LIV players, you know, back into the majors. I understand there's 12 of them in the U.S. Open field this week. What about getting these guys back into the Ryder Cup? And how does world golf rankings all come back together? And does everybody reunify under the OWGR?
Well, those are all details that need to be worked out. The announcement said that there would be some sort of fair and reasonable mechanism that if players wanted to come back to either tour, they could apply for reinstatement and there would be a process. I think that process involves giving some of the riches to the other guys that stayed. Ryder Cup, hard to see right now how that's going to shake out. I'm guessing that it won't affect this year's Ryder Cup. I think in 2 years you could see the guys that want to continue to play at that level invited back to the Walker Cup or the Ryder Cup. I don't know that that's going to include Sergio or Westwood or Poulter because they kind of have aged out of the Ryder Cup anyhow. But the rest of them, if their game's in shape and they qualify, I can see them being in the Ryder Cup. Ranking points, these guys, if they come back, they're starting from wherever they are. They've lost an awful lot of ground in those ranking points, and they're not going to get anything or any points for what they've done with LIV. So they're stuck with whatever they got, and they're going to have to play their way out of it.
Well, Jim, typically as we head into a major championship like the U.S. Open coming up next week, it is the actual play, the actual competition, the venue that steals the headlines and gets all the attention from audiences that are eager to consume golf content. With all this going on, to what extent, you know your audience better than anyone, to what extent do you think everyone's ready to stop thinking for a little bit about the business behind professional golf and really focus on what should be an interesting venue out at L.A. Country Club?
I suspect it's going to be not until the first shot is hit next Thursday morning. I think that all of the conversation on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday is going to be about LIV and the PGA Tour. But I'm going to tell you, this golf course is going to be a revelation. Golf viewers, golf fans are not going to believe what they're going to see. This incredible piece of land surrounded by skyscrapers in downtown Los Angeles. And the golf course is just a work of art. I think we're all in for a treat. The weather is going to be great. The only concern is that we all remember about reading about the rains that Southern California took in the winter and the early spring. The rough is not as deep, as not as tall as they would like it to be. They just couldn't grow grass in March and April. They caught up a little bit, but it's not where the USGA ideally would like to see it.
Yeah, Jim, as a matter of fact, I heard that this week. Someone I know was heading out there to the championship and has family members that are members there, and they said the USGA was disappointed that the rough didn't grow, and it's probably not as thick as they really wanted it for the U.S. Open, but that's just the way it's going to be. So I got to believe the scores might be a tad lower than the USGA probably wants them, but we'll probably still see and have to see some amazing golf by not only the winner, but the people who are really in contention on Sunday.
I think you'll see double-digit under par, double-digit red numbers for the winner. But it's still going to be a thrilling and wonderful Open Championship. What Arnold used to call the National Open Championship, I think that's still the best name for it.
Yeah, very, very, very good name for it as well. Jim, anything else you'd like to add? Anything that has jumped out at you from the, we're all going to unify the world of golf agreement here that people should perhaps think about as this thing goes forward?
Just it's there's so many details that have to yet be worked out and agreed to. And so this is just a starting point. There's a lot of ground that needs to be covered, and it needs to be covered quickly because, you know, we're in the middle of June. The PGA Tour season is going to be over in less than 90 days. And then we start thinking and talking about 2024. So there's an awful lot that needs to be answered in the next 90 days by the tour and by LIV.
And how much, again, I know you touched on it a little bit at the beginning of the interview, but tell us what we can expect to see at the Global Golf Post here for the next couple of weeks.
Well, we're certainly going to take you behind the scenes on the whole PIF, LIV, PGA Tour scenario. That's a story that I'm doing myself. And you're going to get a good dose of looking forward to what to expect at Los Angeles Country Club. So this is an important issue for us always, the week of the U.S. Open, but this year it's really important.
Okay, real good. Well, Jim Nugent, owner, publisher of the Global Golf Post, thanks for jumping in this morning and talking a little U.S. Open, talking a little bit about the business side of the PGA Tour LIV Golf battle, and we'll look forward to getting in front of the computer on Monday and sitting back and enjoying everything that you and your staff have put together. And if you're headed out to L.A. this week, safe travels and have fun at the Open.
Look forward to it. Thank you for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. Take care. That's Jim Nugent, Global Golf Post. It is 10:48. Rory Spears along with Ed Stevenson in studio. We got Len Zeme on the line from the Palm Air Country Club Studios in beautiful Sarasota, Florida. And Lenny, you know what? It's we didn't have a chance to chat about this with you last week with you on the road, but a good run, but perhaps a step short for the Fighting Illini out at the National Championships, and perhaps one of the best chances Mike Small had to win a national championship in a while. And I see that the university has announced he's got a new assistant coach coming over from Iowa State that came out yesterday. And Small also received a Coach of the Year honors from one publication. But what are your thoughts on Illini golf? Mike Small says he doesn't like to rebuild. He likes to reload. And I'm sure he plans on being back at the Nationals next year.
Yeah, I tell you though, this team he had this year, I still stand by it. I mean, he's had a team that went further in the tournament a little bit, but this was the best team Mike's had. The fact that the Chassart and Kuhl stayed around as fifth-year seniors, I think that was a big break for Illinois that they did that. It's too bad. I thought this was the year they'd finish it off. And you know, it's a fickle day. The match play part of match play is that kind of a game, though. I mean, it's the format of the tournament is. Just calls for match play at the end, and I think it's a good thing. I think it really determines the champion. It just kind of got away from Illinois there. Now he's going to always have a good team. I mean, he's got the tradition built, and he's got momentum over all 23 years over there. He's built a lot of great momentum for his ability to coach, so I'm sure they'll be good again. But it's hard to imagine that a team as strong as experienced as this team was, coming up again anytime soon. It's too bad, but I mean, I'm sure they'll be good. I'm sure they'll be good. And sometimes teams overachieve, and I think that. If Mike can get one of those going, they might manage to get the NCAA title. But this was an opportunity loss, no question about it.
Yeah, I'm looking at the announcement from the University of Illinois that popped out yesterday afternoon with the announcement of the new assistant coach. Ruben Sanjaya is... now the assistant coach on staff comes over after 4 years at being a part of the Iowa State University golf program, and says he's ecstatic to have an opportunity to work with Illinois. But, you know, also Sanjaya, he played his college golf at Iowa State. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how long he stays at Illinois, because I got to believe, having been a player there, having been a coach there, should that job open up at some point, he'll be headed back there.
Well, no.
Well, I would be a tough place to coach, I think, but for golf. I mean, you have to have it's really no different than Illinois, but it'll take, you know, climate-wise. But it is a little bit different, and I think that Mike's took on a very unusual position and had unusual success where he's at. So I don't know. Going back to the school that you've played at and coached at is maybe a natural feel good thing, and so I guess that could happen. But you know, time will tell. I hear he's very well recommended as for an assistant. Mike's excited to have him, and we'll see how I'm sure he's qualified, and we'll see how the Illini go from here.
Well, yeah, it's an endless cycle of course, recruiting to reload. And then, of course, the coaching itself is the differentiator for so many programs. And to be able to both recruit and coach well and really develop and inspire and motivate these young individuals, it's a well-rounded art if you're going to be successful for a sustained period of time. And you're right. I think Ames, Iowa, or Iowa City, for that matter, you know, any of these Illinois places are disadvantaged when it comes to recruiting, when you look in the national perspective. And yet, you know, some of these programs have still been able to make, you know, Mike Small's done an amazing job of actually making Illinois a very recruitable destination compared to some other places around the Midwest.
Yeah, and you know what, Len, another thing, I know an event that, you know, when you were up here writing for years with the Sun-Times, you used to love to go out and cover was the Radix Cup. And the 61st annual Radix Cup matches will take place on Thursday at Oak Park Country Club. It is the annual battle between the Illinois PGA players and the top CDGA amateurs. Ed, you got your invitation. They got you coming out for the team, right?
I would love to represent. I am not invited. There's some great players that are playing at a much higher level than I am, and Yeah, I'm a little tied up running a few places.
Yeah, Lenny, do you have any good memories, some exciting finishes out there? The CDGA Amateurs won last year, and they are the defending champs.
Well, you know, it's always exciting when the amateurs play well. I haven't been exactly the regular at that event, but, you know, this week has a, as you well know, another very big tournament going on locally, and that's the 90th staging of the Illinois State Women's Amateur at a place you know well, the Grove.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in seeing how that one goes. I'm just as interested in that as the Ratings Cup. I think it's going to be an exciting tournament. I gather that that the field is a little bit different than it has been. I was hoping for maybe one of they had some great battles the last 2 years, and I was hoping that you might be able to see that. But always a good tournament. I think the Illinois State Women's Amateur has played downstate an awful lot in the past, and we haven't all been able to appreciate that event. But I'm looking forward to seeing how that one comes out.
Yeah, the Women's State Amateur was played at the Grove 3 years ago, and it's really nice to have them back. I've been working with a lot of the players, helping them set up their practice rounds and helping them stock up their golf bags. Some of them have come out already and needed to put a few Pro Vs or Callaway Chrome Softs in their bag and go on out and challenge our golf course. But I know our professional staff, starting with our new director of golf, Tony Putzer, our head professional, Matt Simon, and Jake Rieger, our clubhouse manager, and everybody that works there. We're all real excited to have the gals out this week. We've sort of, some of our staff was a very small part of this, but a couple of the ladies I work with in the pro shop, we've sort of redesigned it a little bit. And I think the gals are going to come in and appreciate the fact that we realize it's Ladies Week at the club, so to speak. So I'm sure that we'll see some wonderful golf out there. And I know a few of the past champions, including Sarah Arnold, are back in the field again. And you know what? I'm looking forward to watching them play.
Yeah, it's going to be it'll be great, Rory. And hey, guys, I know we just have a couple minutes left. I'll throw out there we can pick up on it on a future week. But it was just this last week that Golf Week puts out their annual rankings of the best you can play in each state. And those of us that operate public venues here in Illinois always look forward to see how the Raiders rated places. And it's always interesting. It sparks some great debate, I think, amongst golfers and even ourselves of how those ratings turned out. But once again, Cog Hill, Dubs Dread, number one on the list, tops the list. We talk a lot on this show, especially around John Deere Classic time, about TPC Deer Run coming in at number two. And as we kind of continue through some of the top courses there, we see Highlands of Elgin at three, Stonewall Orchard at four, the Glen Club at five, Eagle Ridge, the General at six. And hey, I'll plug one of my own places, the Preserve at Oak Meadows, where I'm proud to be director of golf, came in at number seven. So you can check out the list if you search 2023 Best You Can Play by State from Golf Week. Always fun conversation, and really underscores the point that we have some great public access golf courses and resorts here in Illinois.
Lenny, any final thoughts as we get ready here to putt out on 18 today?
Well, I tell you, I want to make my I've had some pretty good luck in recent years picking winners of the Masters, and I went over my picks in the ING pool here, which for the U.S. Open, I forgot who I had picked, and, you know, I think I made a pretty good pick here. You have to make these picks before the season starts, but I have on my list here Xander Schauffele. I kind of like that one. I like to get there, so when he wins, you'll draw attention to it. I had Scottie Scheffler when he won the Masters. That's my most recent best one. So see where we go from there.
All right. Hey, I like that pick. You know, just because I think it'd be fun to see, I'm going to pick Rory McIlroy, who I think is feeling pretty motivated in the midst of all the announcements going on.
Okay. Well, at the beginning of the year in the ING pool that Lenny mentioned, where we had to pick the winners the first week of January, I actually threw out California boy Dustin Johnson.
Whoa.
So we'll see. He's played always real well at Opens that have been in California. We'll see if he can keep it going this week.
All right. Well, with that, hey, we're ready to tap it in here on 18 and call it a show. We'll be back on next week here on AM 750 at 10 a.m., bringing you Golfers on Golf Radio. In the meanwhile, you can catch us online at golfersongolf.com. We want to certainly thank our guests. We want to thank our producer, Brian. And most importantly, thank you, the listeners, for spending part of your day with us. Enjoy the weekend. We'll catch you back here next week at 10 a.m.
The preceding program, Golfers on Golf, was paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.